Welcome to the Morning Magazine for Monday, February 14th of 2022. I'm your host, Ellie Stuckrath. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, CityCast Denver examines the trend of homeless individuals seeking shelter and basic needs at the Denver International Airport. And we'll take another look at the Housing First approach to resolving the issue of homelessness in Front Range cities. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the BBC headlines and then the Hightower Lowdown, followed by Storytellers of Color. Host Rosanna Longo-Better will spend the program with Donnie L. Betts, an accomplished actor, producer, director, filmmaker, teacher, and storyteller of the award-winning radio drama series Destination Freedom, Black Radio Days, aired on KGNU. And as always, on Monday morning, it's Counterspin at 9 a.m., a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. Then, at 9:30, Ann Cantillo will be in the Boulder studio to bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. All that is still ahead this morning, but first, a look at local and regional headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
Colorado Governor Jared Polis is urging people to be civil and respectful toward others who choose either to wear a mask or to go without one during COVID-19. Polis appeared yesterday on the national television broadcast of Fox News Sunday. The Denver Gazette reports that states led by Democratic governors, including Connecticut and New Jersey, have started to ease masking mandates. Colorado's statewide mask mandate ended last May. The state's positivity rate of infection still remains high, but has dropped significantly since a peak about a month ago. As of last Wednesday, just over 860 people were hospitalized in Colorado with COVID-19, the fewest number since the beginning of October. On Saturday, about 100 protesters gathered at Governor Polis' Boulder residence, rallying against COVID-19 vaccine mandates. Some carried signs saying, "Freedom over fear" and "Unmask the truth." Others expressed their support for Canadian truckers who had earlier blocked roads in protest of vaccine orders in that country. The Daily Camera reports that one protester said they were part of a group called No Vaccine Mandates Colorado. While there are no vaccine mandates in Boulder County, some state and federal laws require them for certain businesses and individuals, including healthcare workers and state employees. However, they can instead be tested twice a week for the virus. The governor's office did not respond to the protest. The Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission is scheduled to decide Wednesday whether to allow drilling to take place in contravention of a 2,000-foot setback rule. A subsidiary of oil giant Occidental Petroleum has asked for a waiver from the buffer so it could drill 26 wells near almost 90 homes in the town of Firestone. The Colorado Sun reports that critics say granting the request would make the new oil and gas rule useless. The 2,000-foot buffer rule was imposed after a law was passed in 2019 that shifted COGCC's role from promoting oil and gas development to protecting public health, safety, welfare, and the environment. Mike Foote, who used to be a state legislator representing part of Boulder County, said that this type of drilling in neighborhoods was what the law was designed to prevent. He was one of the bill's sponsors. According to The Sun, the commission has already approved two drilling waivers inside the 2,000-foot setback rule, one involving over only a few homes and the other was approved by a resident. State health officials are opposed to the waiver unless certain conditions are met, but the company has rejected most of them. In related news, a measure at the state legislature would require strong air monitoring rules to cut hazards in neighborhoods. Environmental justice advocates have prioritized the bill, according to the Colorado Sun. The measure would place 5 new air toxin measuring sites around the state. It would also set hazardous levels for dozens of chemicals and start requiring the cutback of industrial emissions. The environmental groups and the bill's sponsors say that air toxins at the neighborhood level are largely unknown and unregulated. Jenna Griswold, the Colorado Secretary of State, has issued new temporary rules intended to enhance the security of the state's voting systems. Griswold's announcement comes after systems around the state have been breached. She said that every Colorado voter, Republican, Democrat, and unaffiliated, deserves accessible and secure elections, according to Colorado Newsline. The rules will guide officials on how images of voting equipment systems can be made. Investigators have been looking into the conduct of two county clerks, one in Mesa County and the other in Elbert County, involving the sharing of copies of hard drives. Griswold said that the rule changes are immediately necessary for Colorado to comply with both state and federal law. And Griswold was the focus of a lengthy town hall-style meeting of far-right election deniers in Douglas County last Thursday night. Colorado Newsline reports that what was called an emergency meeting was organized by right-wing activist Joe Altman and was attended by Mesa County Clerk Tina Peters just a day or so after she was arrested for obstructing the seizure of her iPad pursuant to a search warrant. The crowd at the event gave Peters a standing ovation. Before Peters arrived, Sean Smith, a prominent election conspiracy advocate, rallied the crowd against Secretary of State Griswold, accusing her of complicity in election fraud. People there chanted, "Lock her up." Smith said that if someone is involved in election fraud, then they deserve to hang, garnering applause and shouts from the crowd. Griswold tweeted out a video of the event and said that she was sharing it so everyone can see the threats against election officials like her are happening every day and that people must stand up to these blatant attempts to end democracy as we know it. The Federal Emergency Management Agency has approved covering 75% of the cleanup costs for removal of property debris caused by the Marshall Fire. The Daily Camera reports that FEMA's approval was announced by Louisville City Manager Jeffrey Durbin. Those costs include destroyed structures, downed and damaged trees, burned vehicles, and other items. Durbin told his city council that Boulder County is still waiting to hear if FEMA will fund 100% of the costs, and he said they may hear about that in the next couple of weeks. In today's weather, we'll see sunny skies with highs in the mid to upper 50s and an overnight low of 31. About the same for tomorrow, mostly sunny and highs in the upper 50s. Snow is likely Wednesday. Right now, it's about 28 along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. There are so many people experiencing homelessness in Denver, and in some ways, Colorado's problem is bigger than any other state's. According to a U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development study, Colorado's chronically sheltered population has grown more than 250% in the last 14 years. Recently, two Nine News reporters discovered that this uptick in folks looking for shelter has led them to places they've not typically gone before, like the airport. Jeremy Hohola and Zach Newman joined the CityCast Denver host Reed Davies to discuss their latest investigation into why arrests have tripled at the airport in the last few years and how it's all connected to Denver's greater housing crisis.
So Jeremy, I want to start kind of at the beginning of this story. Can you explain exactly what's going on at the airport right now?
So what we can see at the airport is that there has been an increase in the number of homeless contacts with police and people experiencing homelessness at DIA over the last several years. We can see that this number has tripled since 2018, and that's really right around the time the A-line, the train to the plane, started. All the people I spoke to at DIA who are experiencing homelessness, they all told me that they do hop on the train. They don't pay the fare. They get on, and sometimes they get checked, sometimes they don't, but they make their way from Union Station all the way to the airport. And a lot of them are just seeking some refuge, right? They're looking to use the bathrooms. They're looking for warmth. They're looking to charge their phone. And there's Wi-Fi at the airport. And a lot of people who are in this situation told me they can blend in and they don't get harassed much there at DIA. And so it's, you know, the airport is one of those places where it's a public space. You know, you can blend in. There's amenities there that people can use. But what's also, interesting about the airport, it's 25 miles away from the city's core. So I think it's quite the testament of where we are when the city is facing its struggles with trying to mitigate homelessness in the metro area.
But it makes a lot of sense to me when you just lay it out. It's all the things that we as housed folks use every day, right? Warmth, shelter, Wi-Fi, charging our phones. And also you kind of touch on this public space aspect, which is so interesting to me because we just don't have a ton of that left, really. And if you have to go all the way to the airport to get it, so be it.
And I think that, you know, it really begs the question of, like, how are you identifying who is or isn't homeless because of what Jeremy has been finding of folks who are blending in. It's hard to, if someone is, you know, has a red eye, needs to try to catch some sleep and doesn't want to go get a hotel, looks very similar to someone who's trying to get off the street. The thing that stands out and the way that we started going down this path is if you look at the arrest data at the airport, one of the third largest category is trespassing. And so it's a weird quirk because it's like, hey, this is a public space. How can you be trespassing there?
That was something I wanted to ask about because I thought, how do we decide who's trespassing in a public space? Because I've been to the airport. I've slept on the floor waiting for a flight or a layover. How are they deciding who's trespassing?
And I've talked to, you know, friends who work in the legal field about this, and all of them have told me, you know, airports are weird areas, right? Mm. They're managed by local municipalities, but a lot of times they're also overseen by the federal government. And there's a lot of intersecting agencies that crisscross over airport operations. Technically, it is a public place, right? It is managed by public bodies. There's signs around the airport that actually say if you don't have business at the airport, you are technically trespassing. And I can share with you some of those signs. I've never noticed them until we started, you know, going to the airport and doing the story. And from what I understand is that there is the ability for the city to issue what's called area restrictions at DIA. But it's a weird area, and it's a good, interesting legal question. But it's clear police have been using the court-issued area restrictions to arrest people for trespassing who've been out there numerous times.
I know that Union Station sort of plays a part in this conversation because particularly the A line, right, runs from Union Station to the airport. And there's been a lot of talk about what's going on at Union Station right now, very similar issues, people experiencing homelessness, using the space for shelter. Again, it's one of those weird semi-public space situations. Can either of you talk to the connections there between DIA and Union Station in this issue?
What I've been told by people who advocate for the homeless in Denver is that when they shut down Civic Center Park and they closed that off, a lot of people began congregating at Union Station. And a lot of the homeless advocacy groups that we spoke to, they blame the city's sweeps for pushing people out from the core to areas like the airport. The city pushes back against that assertion, saying that this is a trend that is being seen at airports across the country. But a lot of people do feel that the city's efforts to move people from spot to spot to spot is pushing them away because of the camping ban.
And yeah, and I think the thing that stands out the most from the numbers is that there are 30 people who have been arrested repeatedly for trespassing at DIA. So that shows that there is this cycle that you can't arrest your way out of, and that it just makes you wonder what other strategy could be used, because arresting isn't working if folks continue to go out there either way, and they obviously need help.
And I know that you all talked to Kathy Alderman at Colorado Coalition for the Homeless, who basically told you the same thing. This is not working. Did you hear from her or any city officials or service providers about other ideas or ways that we could address this situation other than just arresting people?
So the answer that is now being put forth by advocates for the homeless like Kathy Alderman is housing. Get housing.
Yeah.
Get affordable housing. I asked her, I said, you know, this, you know, during an interview, I said, you know, there's really no simple solution to this. And she kind of she paused me a little bit. And she says, yes, there is. It's actually housing. But if you look at the efforts that are being made by the city, they're noble efforts. The city has been trying the Housing First program, where you get someone who's experiencing chronic homelessness, you get them housing first, then you get them treatment, because the house is the stabilizer, right? You need someone staying in the house. And an independent study has shown that Denver's Housing First program is cheaper than the cycle of jail and hospital stays over and over again. But when you have so many people who need this service, but only hundreds of people into the program, it's making a dent, but it's not making a dent in a way where it's mitigating the number of people experiencing homelessness. We've seen a huge uptick in the number of people living on the streets now because of a lack of affordable housing and COVID impacts, like job loss and stagnant wages.
Do you think that we'll see changes at the airport, or what do you think from what you've learned might be something that we need out at the airport?
The hard part about covering homelessness is like trying to solve it in a way, right? It is so hard to put into simple terms the crisis that we're experiencing with homelessness. It's a complex problem, and when you reduce it down to simple terms, it kind of does a little bit of a disservice on what you're trying to give out in a mass message, in a report. But I do think people are concerned that, you know, the homeless crisis in Denver continues to spiral out of control. We're seeing these conflicts that are going on all over the metro area between people living on the street and people who do not want tents on their front stoops and on their front porches. It's one of those things that I think people want to talk about, but it can also lead to polarizing debates, right? But I think the right way to approach this is to approach it with a sense of humanity and to approach it in a way where you're not demonizing people experiencing homelessness, because you don't know exactly what they're going through and you don't want to cause more harm to them.
Jeremy and Zach, thank you so much for joining me and for sharing a little bit more of the backstory on your reporting.
Definitely. Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us, Bree.
That was an excerpt of the CityCast Denver podcast. Guests were 9 News reporters Jeremy Hohola and Zach Newman. Housing First was a phrase mentioned in the CityCast interview. A few months ago, KGNU reporter Alexis Kenyon looked into how the policy is working in practice in Boulder and in Denver. We revisit that report now.
All right, here we go.
Robert Myers is 53 and showing me around his apartment in North Boulder. His name has been changed to respect his privacy.
Pretty nice little get-up, so.
He lives in a 31-unit Housing First community called Lee Hill. The city rents all the units to people who have been chronically homeless.
So that's a lot of my books that I've read.
Before moving into this apartment, Robert had been homeless for about 6 years, living in and out of shelters. The Lee Hill community was Boulder's first experiment with a Housing First approach to homelessness, which prioritizes getting people housed over sobriety or workforce programs. Michael Block, the chief housing officer for Boulder Shelter for the Homeless, says the best response to homelessness is getting people housed.
I know that every homeless person I see can't afford the rent. That's what I know. And that's all I need to know, because if I can make the rent affordable for them, I can end their homelessness.
The Housing First approach has proliferated in recent years. The Office of Veterans Affairs began using it about 10 years ago. Homelessness among veterans has since dropped by half. In 2016, Denver created a Housing First program called the Supportive Housing Initiative Bond, or SIB. It housed 300 chronically homeless people living in Denver. Kathy Alderman of the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless says they convinced Denver officials with an economic argument.
We would make proposals to say, look, we can house individuals for around $20,000 a year. And if we leave them to use emergency rooms, the jail system, detoxes, and shelters, it's going to cost upward of $40,000 a year per person.
SIB ended up saving Denver millions of dollars, and 99% of the people they housed remain in the program. But getting people on board with Housing First means changing the narrative around homelessness, says Lyndall Ellingson, a resident coordinator for Boulder Housing Partners.
I mean, I would say that a lot of homelessness has a lot more to do with luck than with choice. And it turns out that when people aren't living on the streets, getting exposed to more trauma every day, they can make big shifts in their lives. And as a community, you can save money.
The next big challenge for Housing First is getting it funded at a national level, says Block.
Homelessness is not being addressed nationally. And so it exists in these pockets. And Boulder is a pocket where it exists. The causes are all national and the politics, the impact is all local. So yeah, they do some solution stuff, but they also are in management mode.
Even so, since Boulder switched to a housing first approach, it's made a huge difference.
Hundreds are housed and supported. And I mean, I think that our community needs to be unbelievably proud of that.
Back at Lee Hill, Robert says, since he moved in, his health has stabilized, although he still struggles with a tremor, which came on aggressively when he was homeless.
One of the biggest emotions I've had over the years is a lot of anger at people because they don't get what it's like to go through a period where you just don't have anywhere to go. They don't get that they have a bed to go home to at night. Like, for homeless people, it's not like that.
Robert says when he first moved into Lee Hill, there was a lot of tension about whether or not housing homeless people was a good idea. But recently that shifted.
I think we've just fallen on such a hard economic time that everyone's being squeezed now. And it's like, it might go a longer way to all of us being compassionate to each other.
In Boulder and Denver, Housing First programs continue to grow. Their success has pushed the topic of homelessness to the top of the agenda for local and state lawmakers. Still, when it comes to getting everyone who is chronically homeless off the streets, Boulder, Denver, and the rest of the U.S. have a long way to go. For KGNU and Rocky Mountain Community Radio Coalition, I'm Alexis Kenyon in Boulder.
Let's dig in a bit more into why Boulder is such an expensive city in which to live. Housing costs here have been steadily rising in recent years, while the addition of housing stock has not kept a pace. Limits on building heights and preservation of the urban greenbelt are factors, but there's also the matter of the city's occupancy limits. Boulder's occupancy limits are lower than those in Denver and half of the federal occupancy standard of two unrelated persons per bedroom in a rental property. An effort to raise Boulder's occupancy limits was on the local ballot last election, but failed. CU students Abby Sherman and Ashley Hamlin looked into the issue for this report produced for the Brink series.
In most of Boulder, no more than three unrelated individuals are allowed to rent together under the same roof. This limit can make it difficult for individuals to afford housing, especially for full-time students unable to hold down more than a part-time job while attending school. It's a situation Sarah Dawn Haynes has been witnessing for years.
My work on this issue began about 7 years ago when some alumni, past members of the environmental board and staff at the environmental center, and some other friends invited me to a meeting and was like, hey, a lot of our friends are getting in trouble for over occupancy. People are having a hard time staying in Boulder, and like, we want to do something about it. You want to come to our group? And I was like, sure.
The group she met with that day was Bedrooms Are for People, a group of Boulder residents concerned about the environmental and economic consequences of Boulder's occupancy limit. The group was able to help pass an ordinance allowing for co-op housing in the city. They then moved to fighting the occupancy limit, developing Proposition 300, which appeared on the most recent Boulder County ballot. For Sarah Dawn, supporting this group was an easy decision. She herself had lived in co-op housing and views the expansion of housing options in Boulder as both an environmental and equity issue.
We need to use existing housing stock better before we sprawl or build more housing. We find also that co-ops or community living have less cars than the average American household and use less energy.
Despite the work done by Bedrooms Are for People, Proposition 300 failed. For some members of the Boulder community, though, the occupancy limit serves an important purpose.
What Measure 300 would do, it wouldn't give more housing to people. It would actually just raise the prices for the people who are already here.
Hope Michelson, Boulder resident and CU engineering professor, has been very vocal about the limitations of Proposition 300.
Investors from outside of Boulder are coming to the Hill and buying up houses, so they're paying cash in a day. and outcompeting young families who are trying to buy houses. If you increase the occupancy limits, it makes the real estate in Boulder even more valuable to someone like that, to an investor to come in and take up this property.
Despite these critiques, with Proposition 300 failing, occupancy limits will continue to impact students. The lack of affordable housing in Boulder means students are finding themselves living in overoccupancy, with landlords leasing out more than 4 bedrooms to students and finding loopholes in the system. A group of 6 CU Boulder students found themselves with a landlord who had one of those loopholes figured out.
They kind of did like a hack, because we're in like a big house with 2 different units. And so there's 3 of us on one unit and then 3 of us on the other. So technically it was legal.
In the opinion of those students who are living in overoccupancy, the rule largely isn't followed or enforced, and there wouldn't be enough housing if it were.
Especially in big houses over here or on the hill, there's more than 3 rooms. Nobody can really follow that.
Even if students are not directly punished for living overoccupied, they gain none of the legal benefits of being included on a lease, such as building credit and establishing residency. In order to mitigate this issue, one potential solution lies in increased development of university-funded student housing. Until this comes to fruition, students will continue to live in a housing gray area. For KGNU's The Brink Series, this is Abby Sherman with Ashley Hamlin.
And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Ellie Stuckrath. Special thanks to Jamie Sutler, CityCast Denver, Alexis Kenyon, Abby Sherman, and Ashley Hamlin for their contribution to today's program. Stay tuned for a commentary from Jim Hightower, and then it's Storytellers of Color with Rosanna Longo-Better. That's just after these news headlines from the BBC.